أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله الذي لا يبلغ مدحته القائلون ولا يحصي نعماءه العادون ولا يؤدي حقه المجتهدون الذي لا يدركه بعد الحمم ولا يناله غوص الفطن ثم الصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين حبيب قلوبنا وطبيب نفوسنا وشفيع ذنوبنا سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم وآل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المظلومين لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين صاحب العصر والزمان خليفة الرحمن إمام الإنس والجان ولعن الله وعداهم أجمعين إلى يوم الدين. أما بعد، فقد قال الله وقوله الحق. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. أَوَمَنْ كَانَ مَيْتًا فَأَحْيَيْنَاهُ وَجَعَلْنَا لَهُ نُورًا يَمْشِي بِهِ فِي النَّاسِ صدق الله العلي العظيم. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم. We first of all send our condolences to the Imam of our time and to all of you, my sisters and brothers in Islam and your families, on the arrival of the days of Fatimiyya. These days are no less than the days of Ashura. In fact, many historians have said, and I always make this point every single year, that had Fatimiyya and what transpired during the days of the of these days of mourning of Fatimiyya, then perhaps the courage and the audacity of those who did what they did to Abu Abdullah al-Husayn on the day of Ashura maybe would not have done what they did. I am honored, I am humbled to be with all of you, the Stanmore Hujjat community out in London. It would have been my honor, would have been nice if I was there in person with all of you. That was the plan, of course, this year, and I really thought that when this pandemic hit in about March and things were shut down here in Toronto, I thought that maybe at least by Fatimiyya things would be a little bit calmed down. But we have now passed through 9 months of this, and there doesn't seem to be a proper end in sight. It's been a tough few months, and in trying to look at what to talk about during these days, and to look at the life of Sayyidah Fatima Zahra Salaamu Alayha, I thought that I would look at the concept of selflessness and the idea of being a light for others in this era of darkness. And given the fact that of all the different attributes and the different paths and the different behaviors that Sayyidah Fatima left behind for us to emulate, it seemed as if her selflessness, her ability now to do a lot for others and not so much for herself, was her prime and one of the most glowing attributes that we have. Now, a lot of people have asked me that, you know, this idea that she lived a very young life. Number two, her day-to-day life is not very well documented. There might be a few historians here and there, but the way that the Prophet of Allah is documented, the way that the Imams are documented, she is not documented. And I think that there is some raz behind it. There is some secret behind that. And, you know, the ulama now have said that, look, everything from her life to her death, hatta to where she's buried, seems to be all secretive. And maybe we should respect that secrecy and that privacy. And so what we're left with is how she was with others. We examine her life with her father, the Holy Prophet. And, you know, maybe the best compliment any father could ever give a daughter was that he called her Umme Abiha, the mother of her father. I mean, that's the level of which she took care of her father, looked after him, comforted him. At a time where, you know, he was going through a lot in Mecca. She would tend to his wounds. She would create a safe and a comfort-filled haven for him when he would come after a rough day outside of Mecca. And, you know, if that connection between the daughter and the father wasn't enough, the way she stood there and was the first defender of the wilayat of her husband, Amir al-Mu'mineen, was another beautiful display of her selflessness. And if that's not enough, you look at the words and how she taught her children how to pray for others. Jaru thumma daru, a very famous statement by Sayyidah Fatima, that when she was asked by, presumably, her first child, second Imam, Imam Mujtaba alayhi salatu wasalam, that, you know, the etiquettes of prayer, she said, first your neighbors and then your own house, meaning essentially, first others than you. It's such a simple concept, and yet it's a concept that I think is kind of forgotten. And this pandemic, you know, it needs to be revived. I think about, you know, how these past 9 months now, you know, approaching now 10 months really, how these past 9-10 months were spent by the elderly. I really worry about our elders. You know, these were individuals, those of you who've been to Toronto, you know that we have very harsh winters, right? Icy roads and deep snow and frigid cold weather. And these are immigrants, elders that have come from warm climates like Africa and India, Pakistan. And yet I find that on a random Thursday night, no khas munasib dates, no shahadat, no waladat, just a random Thursday night. Okay. And the weather is brutal out there. Even, you know, the weather networks are saying stay at home if you have to. You know, I would go because I have a class to give, I have a lecture to give. I would see the more than half of the people in front of me in that crowd on that random Thursday were our elders. They drove by themselves, they bundled up, they took the risk of falling in the parking lot. But to them, the thought of staying home just wasn't an option. Yes, we had the online option or the live feed, but they relied heavily on that once a week social interaction. Yeah, they might get something for half an hour lecture, but it's more about breaking bread and having an amazing cup of tea. And they haven't had that. Yeah, we opened up a little bit in Muharram, this and that, at least in Toronto when things calmed down, but it wasn't the same. I mean, restrictions and masks and 6 feet apart and sanitizer and, you know, in one door, out the other. It just wasn't the same. And those are the types of people that thrive and they literally depend on the center, the mosque, for their survival, essentially. They're at that stage in their life where they're not raising kids anymore, right? Their own kids are quite busy establishing their own lives, rightfully so. And so they rely heavily on the center. I worry about those people. I worry about, you know, domestic abusers. I worry about people who are victims of abuse. Not the abuser. I worry about the abused. Imagine being home with someone 24/7 who constantly abuses you, verbally, physically, God forbid, who's a tyrant inside the home. Imagine those kids who have to now tippy-toe and, you know, who have to, like, you know, walk on eggshells around in their own house. You know, if the individual who was doing the abuse now was working outside the home, they'd have a break for 8-9 hours because he's gone to work. But now, he's most likely working from home. How do people like that survive in a pandemic like this? The youth, I worry about the youth out there. You know, one thing that I'm so concerned about, and this is really the first time I've officially kind of addressed the Hujjat community in London. And, you know, like I said, it would have been so nice for me to actually be there in person. I've been there before. I've met a few of you, you know. I was supposed to come a few times before. I've gotten sick in the past. So, you know, these are issues that I think have to be discussed. I am concerned about, you know, whatever normal will look like post-pandemic. When things do settle down, the vaccine kind of gets out, everything kind of goes into herd immunity, and now and it becomes like a common cold or the measles or whatever the case may be, malaria, let's say, for example. What will the youth, how will they react, I think, is my question. Because, you know, in Toronto, in the first of Zilhijjah, just before Muharram started, when things were a little bit now in grasp here in Toronto in terms of numbers, our local center decided to open up. Okay, because it was 3 months at that moment. You know, Ramadan had now gone and passed. Now people were at home. The Amal of Shab-e Qadr at home. Let's say, for example, the nights of the of Imam Ali Shahadat at home. And it was tough. Eid at home, Eid namaz at home. It wasn't easy. It was a big sacrifice. Shawwal came in, when Zil-Qa'idah came in. Then when Zil-Hijjah hit, they said, look, this is enough now. We need, if there are some restrictions that have been lifted, let's lift them. So there was a decision made with an immense amount of restrictions to open up the center. And they did. But the first group that said no thank you to opening the center was the youth. They said, look, we're happy with the online system. We're happy with myself reciting every Thursday night or every majlis or every, let's say, jashan. And they're in their homes, they're on their devices, in their rooms, comfortable in their clothing. No commute, no weather, no three-hour program, no parking issues, nothing. No. And they're getting the exact same knowledge they would have got before. So why would they? And, maybe that's convenience, but convenience has a funny way of becoming the norm after a while. And my concern is that they just don't see a need for the brick and mortars of the actual building. And we slowly but surely kind of trickle into this virtual masjid world. Now, maybe that's dramatic, but the faster my youth, doesn't matter where you are, Toronto, London, Africa, doesn't matter. The faster you realize the importance of attaching yourself to a physical building, and yes, getting out there, driving in a car, driving your family to the center, 20 minutes, 25 minutes, 45-minute drive, going there, saying salam to the people, meeting people, maybe gathering, gaining a little bit of knowledge, breaking some bread, having that amazing, amazing mosque chai that you can't get anywhere else, and going back home. That whole experience does wonders for our spirituality. You cannot emulate that sitting in your home in your pajamas watching a device. It might be the exact same speech, but everything else now is lost. So my point is that this pandemic now has caused a lot of issues. And yes, there are some of you who have thrived. You've actually gone closer with your family. You and your husband, you and your wife now are the closest you've ever been because of the pandemic. You're at home now. There's Jamaat namaz now because the kids are at home. There's meals at home. If you were a traveler like me, you've been grounded for over a year. The last time I was on a flight on a plane was literally maybe a month ago. Sorry, a year ago. After that, but that's not always the situation. That's not something that is always happening right now. The silver lining might be that you might be stronger. That's part of the reason why I want to speak about this for the next few nights that I'm with you. Now I'm with you until the weekend, inshallah. And I want to make sure that I expand this option, this topic, to ensure that all of you understand, and myself included, that we have a responsibility to break the idol of individualism, to break this chain in this and this weight that we have on our shoulders, that look, as long as we're okay, I'm okay, me and my kids are great, me and my spouse are great, in fact, we haven't been greater. We have to learn now to extend the hand out and help those who are desperately in need. The verse that will be the base of our discussion from Surah An'am, verse 122. It's a very beautiful verse. It's one that I have recited an entire ashra on. 2018, my first ashra in Muharram, the first 10 days meaning, I spent, I think, 12 nights talking about this one verse alone in Toronto. And while I don't want to go down that route, that was a different discussion altogether. This is a different discussion. The first half of the verse is what is related to our topic. Allah says, Awa man kana maitan. You were dead. You were amongst those who were spiritually dead. Fa'ahyaynahu. We gave you hayat. We gave you life. We brought you back from that dead. And not only did we give you life, wal ja'alna lahu nuran yamshi bihi fin nas. We gave you light as well. You were dead. We gave you hayat. We gave you nur, we gave you light, we gave you life. And that light, that nur inside of you, wasn't just meant for you. You take that light, yamshi bihi finnas, and you walk amongst the people with that light. Meaning what? You illuminate whatever path you can. You become a source of light for those who you know are in darkness. If we are somebody who has become wealthy in this pandemic, I don't mean financially by any means. What I do mean is that for the first time now, my family, my core family, my nuclear family, me, my spouse, and my kids, maybe my parents, maybe my sibling, we have become a very tight unit, Malala. Something I dreamed about. And the silver lining in this pandemic of all these deaths and all these people getting sick is the fact that because of it, my family and I were forced to get stronger. If you have that type of wealth, and it is wealth, Islam says now to spread that wealth. Use that strength, use that wealth you have, and do what with it? Provide for others. There are many people you know in your families, in your communities, your friends, maybe even people you don't know that well, that are right now sitting in darkness. They've lost their job. Their family is falling apart. They are at home with a tyrant ruler. There's somebody who is riddled with mental health issues, anxiety, stress, depression. And it becomes a very lonely world when you are faced with that. On top of that, every news source is just talking about this, the source of your very pain. If you know someone like that, I ask you in this Fatimiya, for the sake of Sayyidah Fatima, reach out to them. Do everything you can to pull them out of their darkness. Look, if you don't have a solution for them, sometimes we don't have solutions. I'm not asking anyone here to swoop in, fly in with your cape and save the day. I'm saying sometimes, even if you sit beside them in their darkness, that's half the battle. I get phone calls from people who are having rough days, rough weeks, rough months. And I don't say a word. They call me. They start talking. I listen. I let them know I'm listening. I'm responding. I'm not cutting them off. I'm not providing solutions. And then you can literally now feel like they are talking themselves out of whatever they're going through. Or their tone is changing. Or they're getting better in this 5-minute conversation. All they needed was somebody to accompany them in their darkness. So literally, guys, I kid you not, after that 5, 10, 15-minute conversation, all I said was, oh, okay, inshallah, yes, I understand. That. Just listening. After 10, 15 minutes, they end up telling me, I just feel so much better, Mana. Thank you so much. I haven't done anything. I haven't provided any solution. I haven't given any sort of, action plan. No, nothing. I just sat there in their darkness. And sometimes that's all that's needed. Unless we're able to do that, it becomes, a very selfish, individualistic world. And that's not what we are about. And it starts with the development of the heart. Imam Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam, Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. He has a very beautiful hadith. This is quoted in Imam Khomeini's rahmatullah alayhi's Chel Hadith, a very beautiful book of morality and ethics and principles. One that I would recommend anyone to recite. It's on read. It's online. It's very well translated. I believe Hadith number 30 is the reference, where it's called the classifications of the hearts, all right? The types of hearts. In there, Imam Khomeini does a sharah, does a commentary of this hadith by Imam Sadiq, where he says, "Inna qaluba arba'a." There are four types of hearts. Al-qalbu fihi nifaq wa iman, number one. Number two, al-qalbu mankus. Number three, al-qalbu matbu'. Number four, al-qalbu azhar. Okay, now, if this was a masjid on the heart, I would go through every single one of them with examples, with proper understanding, terminologies, everything. That's fine. But very quickly, I don't have that kind of time. Very quickly, let's go through these and let's get to the last heart that is really where I want to focus on. Where he says the first one is the heart that has both hypocrisy and faith in it. And sometimes the heart fluctuates between these two realities. You know, that describes a lot of us, right? Sometimes we deceive, we believe, we deceive, and we go on this seesaw, up and down journey with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Sometimes we run towards the musalla, sometimes we have to be dragged towards the musalla. Then he says, al-qalbu mankus. Mankus is literally means to invert something on its head. So the form of it and the function of it, both of it, now has changed. It looks differently, and because it looks differently, it's going to function differently as well. Let me give an example. Your child is having breakfast, says to you, Baba, can I have some milk? Sure you can. I put a glass in front of him, I go to the fridge, I grab some milk, open the milk, about to pour it. He takes the glass and he turns it upside down. Okay? He inverts the glass. Now the opening of the glass is on the bottom and the flat is on the top. And I stop. I go, look, I can't pour the milk in there because the glass won't retain it. Right? Unless you turn it right side up how it should be, then it can go ahead and it can host and hold the milk. So now you can hold it, the milk inside, and drink the milk like you want it. But unless it's inverted, if it's inverted, it's not able to, you're not able to fulfill the purpose that you wanted. Imam Sa'd says, this is the heart of a mushrik, of an idol worshiper, who actually believes that they figured out that, okay, this is what my worship should be. But really, the form and the function of that heart now is lost. Right? And where they think actual guidance is coming in, there's nothing there. Nabi Ibrahim is breaking the major idols, and then when he is confronted, he says, look, ask your big idol. Ask him. He hasn't been destroyed. Ask him what he saw. You know and I know full well that he can't see or hear or speak. And what's the point of you believing in an idol like that, right? Those are people who believe in idols like that, and their hearts are inverted, right? Now, you may think, or I may think that, oh, we're talking about the idols of, you know, of the past. Those who made idols out of rocks or out of I don't know, wood or out of food sometimes. But it can be debated and has been debated that even today we have those idol worshippers today. The idol has changed, but the worshipping has not. That's the second type of qalb. The third type of qalb, al-qalbu matbu'. Matbu' is the opposite of maftuh. Maftuh means to open. Matbu' is something that's sealed. Right? A heart that's sealed is one that nothing goes in, nothing goes out. And because nothing goes in, nothing goes out, either you can't clean the inside or it can't release the dirt from the inside. Or in this case, no misguidance or no inhiraf goes out, no deviation goes out, and no hidayat or tawfiq or inspiration goes in. And that's the heart of a munafiq, of a hypocrite, one who lies to himself or lies to herself and lies to the person outside of them as well. Sealed. Now, mind you, these are all hearts that are not absolute in nature, meaning that once a heart is sealed, it'll never open. No, absolutely. The moment that they get their act together, recognize their mistakes, go back to Allah, astaghfirullah rabbi wa atubu ilayh, then yes, then they begin the process of what? Of now correcting that mistake, sure. Before that, though, no. And it leaves me with the fourth heart, al-qalbu azhar, and that is the illuminated hearts. Azhar is the male, Zahra is the female. A heart that is illuminated. A heart that's illuminated is not just a heart that's meant for the darkness of their soul. It's a flashlight meant to shine on the paths of those around you. Example I've given so many times, guys, I'll give it here as well. You go camping with your friends. It's late at night. You want to go to a certain campsite, right? Obviously, there's no lights. One guy in your tent says, "Guys, I have this massively powerful flashlight. Don't worry about it. Keep your flashlights here. Save your batteries. I have enough light to light up the entire pathway." Perfect. They all leave. It's pitch black. He turns on the light, and lo and behold, it lights up half the campsite. And now he's holding the light. It's his light. But his light is so bright, mashallah, that everybody around him also is able now to walk without tripping and falling because of his light. Or he comes out of the tent. It's all dark. Turns on his light, and there is enough light for 2 inches in front of him. Not enough light for everybody else. So wait a second. You told me you had enough light. No, I guess I didn't. So now the you know, those that are in darkness are stumbling and falling and tripping. You get my point. The qalb azhar is a qalb of the believer. Al qalb al azhara is the one that is for a mu'mina, for a believing woman. The point that Imam Sadiq is making, that look, these are the four types of hearts that all of us, any of us, can at any moment now change our hearts to. And he's trying to make us understand that this is exactly what I want you to do. I want you to work and strive to get to that qalbu azhar, qalbu zahra, right? How do we do that? How do we do that? How do we now care about the person beside me, in front of me, and in this pandemic era where everybody is suffering and everyone's going through? And by the way, I'm not asking you now to, you know, to break the laws now and to, you know, break social distancing. And Milana, we're on lockdown, and what do you want me to do? And literally in this day and age where communication is so easy, all I'm asking you to do is go through your phone, scroll through your contacts, look at various people that you are close to, and send them a one-liner. That's it. Assalamu alaikum, just thinking about you, hope you're doing well, anything you need, I'm missing you at the center. Maybe an emoji here and there. It goes a long way. It goes a very long way. And target our elders, and target people that you know that are struggling with their families. Maybe target those who have lost their jobs, right? Maybe even reach out and go one step further and say, look, if you send me your resume, your CV, then I'm able now to get it maybe to other hands that might help you. But now to ghost somebody, to not even respond, to not even reach out, not even say a word, is difficult. It's hard. What's the point of a community if we can't be there for each other in this era? This is unprecedented. Every country, every nation has gone through their own respective issues. But on a global scale like this, no. With air travel being grounded, no. I haven't seen it in my young life. I like to think I'm young, but in my young life, I haven't. So this is all new to us. But the principles of this deen aren't new to us. They have to be now applied properly. And this is where we reach out to each other. And we break kind of the barriers and say, look, you know. Now, the problem is that a lot of you, a lot of us, even me, we sometimes think 1,000 times. Oh, what if we're not that close? What if they think that I'm I don't know, I'm being nosy? What if they don't trust me? What if they don't reply? What if they say, I'm fine, thank you very much? My response to you is fine. Let them do that. What you've done is that you've told the person that, you know what, somebody is remembering you. You know, I got a phone call 3 weeks ago from a regular member of our community. He has young kids who sit in my class every Thursday night, and he called me. Literally, it was a 90-second conversation. Didn't want anything, didn't have any fiqhi, shadi questions, nothing. I just called to say, Mulana, we miss you. The kids miss you dearly. I hope you're okay. And please pray this is over so we can resume back. I just wanted to hear your voice, and I also wanted you to know that we remember you, we miss you dearly, and you and your family are in our prayers. 90 seconds, guys. It made my week. I'm still on a high. It's just nice to be remembered. But you need the proper heart for it. You need to now escape myself from myself. and maybe look at somebody without any sort of drop of myself in there. Okay? It all stems sometimes from our connection to God. Now, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has a very beautiful hadith al-Qudsi. It is one of my favorites, very, very powerful. Inshallah, after this, we'll go towards Masail. As many of you know, our hadith al-Qudsi are those words of Allah that are not found in the Quran. Okay? Qala Allah, it starts off with. Now, there is some debate about whether or not there is any sort of, you know, accuracy, and some ulama now question it, and it's not my point. We have books that have narrated these hadith al-Qudsis into one compilation. And in there's a hadith. Remember, these are the words of Allah himself. He says, فَمَنْ قَسَدَنِي عَرَفَنِي وَمَنْ عَرَفَنِي أَرَادَنِي وَمَنْ أَرَادَنِي طَلَبَنِي وَمَنْ طَلَبَنِي وَجَدَنِي وَمَنْ وَجَدَنِي خَدَمَنِي وَمَنْ خَدَمَنِي ذَكَرَنِي وَمَنْ ذَكَرَنِي ذَكَرَتُهُ بِرَحْمَتِي. So beautiful. He says, فَمَنْ قَسَدَنِي عَرَفَنِي. The one now who moves towards me. Qast. You know, qast, another word sometimes in Farsi, if someone says qast, you know, qasti qurbat, they have this intention, this desire, I hope that what I'm doing now causes, you know, some closeness. So there is this movement now. We all go through that movement now. We all go through those moments, especially my young guys, where now I think, you know what, let me give God a chance. Okay. And then, you know, he says, فَمَنْ قَسَدَنِي عَرَفَنِي. The one who now makes a move towards me has a certain level of ma'arifat of me. If they didn't have that certain level of ma'arifat of me, they wouldn't move towards me. They would be okay in their standstill movement towards me. وَمَنْ عَرَفَنِي أَرَادَنِي. The one who has ma'arifat of me has this will towards me. Irada is both Urdu, Farsi, and Arabic, right? This will, this desire. This movement towards me. وَمَنْ أَرَادَنِي طَلَبَنِي. And the one who has this will for me, looks for me, searches for me. وَمَنْ طَلَبَنِي وَجَدَنِي. Look at Allah. Look at Allah. The one who looks for me and searches for me, finds me, he says. Allahu Akbar. Finds me. وَمَنْ وَجَدَنِي خَدَمَنِي. And the one who finds me, serves me, becomes my khadim, becomes my khidmat guzar, becomes the one now who does what? Who serves me. وَمَنْ خَدَمَنِي ذَكَرِي. And the one who serves me remembers me, does dhikr of me. And then he ends off this beautiful chain of, and this beautiful journey by saying, وَمَنْ ذَكَرَنِي ذَكَرْتُهُ بِرَحْمَتِي. The one who remembers me, I remember them with my mercy. Beautiful hadith. But the one area that I want to focus on that is marbut and connected to our topic is وَمَنْ وَجَدَنِي خَدَمَنِي. The one who finds me has his desire to serve me. Serve me. How do we serve Allah? How do we become the khuddam of Allah? The khadim of Allah? How? Now a lot of us, people like me, might think that, okay, the khidmat of Allah is to uphold the rights that he has over us. So worship, okay, be the best possible believer, okay. As long as my salah, my fasting, I've done my hajj, I pay my khums, I'm good. That is the best way I can serve God. And the reality is that there are two dimensions to khidmat of Allah, to serving Allah. One is haqqullah, one is haqqun nas. One is upholding the rights that Allah has over us. One is upholding the rights that others have over us. Those of you who have studied fiqh in any sort of depth, you know that there is ibadat and mu'amilat. We think that, look, as long as I've learned the ibadat section, for example, Salat al-Qasr and Salat al-Qaza and this and that, and, you know, went to fast and had the tarakhuz and, you know, fidya and jizya, and I'm good. I'll use that now to go ahead and, you know, and worship Allah. But the reality is that there is a whole different dimension. Sometimes we simply don't pay any attention to. You know how many people and families and cases I have spoken about and I have encountered where, you know, the man of the house, the husband, the father, you know, apparently on the outside looks like a very pious man. Nice thick beard, for example, you know, has a little bit of a sujood sign on his forehead. By all accounts, you know, he's a very pious man in the masjid now, first center, first row, du'a kumail, when no one is there, he's a default, right? The default, right? He comes home, and you ask those who are in his house, his kids and his spouse, and they refer to him as the Fir'aun of the house, the Saddam of the house, the tyrant and the zalim of the house. Can you imagine? So difficult. I've sat there in living rooms. The whole family is there. And the eldest kid, when he has reached that level of frustration now, says, Milana, you, all of you respect my father sitting there because he looks the part. If you ask me, he's a horrible human being. To me, in front of him. Now, I'm not condoning that type of disrespect. Doesn't matter what your father has done to you. But that's coming from a place where this man might think, this father might think, that so long as I don't miss one salat, and I am solid in my month of Ramadan, and I've done my multiple hajjis, I'm good. And the reality is that you're not good. Sorry. That's a misconception. If that worship is actually there, you know, al-salat tanhai al-fahshahi wal-munkar, the Quran says, that salat that you pray should now take you away from evilness, from wretchedness, from you know, indecency and from evil. How is it possible that the more you pray to God, the more evil you are towards your family? How is it possible? The more you worship Allah, the more you uphold His rights, the more you trample on the rights of those around you. That equation to me is messed up. Doesn't make sense to me. Allah is saying the one who finds me now wants to serve me. But we have that service has to be done properly. And that proper service is that we have to look out for others. Yes, initially now in our nuclear families, then our extended family, and then our community. If you are somebody who has a massive family in London, you have siblings and they have kids, you have cousins, you have uncles and aunts and they have kids and grandkids and God knows what else, you know, reach out to them. Reach out to them. When's the last time you called your mom's older brother? When's the last time you called your dad's younger brother? When's the last time you called your mom's sister? Say, auntie, how are you? Khala, how are you? Taya, cha-cha, how are you? Everything okay? And they'll be so happy, they'll give you 1,000 du'as. But the point is, we must break those chains. In the name of Sayyidah Fatima, who time and time again, when she whether she was a daughter, a wife, or a mother, she preached with her words and her actions. It's all about being selfless. It's all about being selfless. In these next nights that I'm with you, inshallah, you're stuck with me now, I'm sorry. Let's examine this a little bit further. Let's look at topics like our own happiness sometimes resides in us fulfilling another person's happiness. A lot of us are riddled with mental health issues. And we think for a second that the deen doesn't have a solution. No, it does have a solution. Inshallah, we'll explore that solution. How is it that we can push ourselves? What does true happiness mean if it doesn't mean finding happiness for others? Right? So this idea of the illuminated heart, this idea now that you have the flashlight in your hand and this pandemic, your light has gone brighter and brighter and stronger, share the light with others. Reach out. Maybe you can reach out to sisters and your husband can reach out to brothers. Maybe, you know, your kids can reach out to kids and you guys can reach out to whatever the case may be, as a family unit, if you're strong, if you're one of the ones who are surviving and thriving in this pandemic, then, like I said, share that risk and that wealth that Allah has given you. It's not easy. We have forces inside of us that simply don't want to do that. Why should I? I worked very hard on my marriage. I have worked very hard now to make the best of this pandemic. Why should I now bring myself down or even allow a portion of me to go towards that person who's given up on life, man? They packed it in. Forget it. They won't fight for their marriage. They won't fight for their kids. Why should I? Why should I do that? Why should I sacrifice that time away from my family to give them? And that has to be addressed. And it will be addressed. So there's lots to talk about, guys, in these next few nights that I'm with you. But the basis is there should be a reaction that if I am this comfortable, I want those around me that I love and I am close to also be that comfortable. If not for anything else, all in the sida of Sayyidah Fatima Zahra Salamu Alayha. Just, you know, this connection between Imam Hussein and Sayyidah Fatima. I know, inshallah, you know, the Shahadat will recite on the weekend, and it's important that, you know, we understand, first establish, you know, how difficult these days are for the Ahlul Bayt in general. When we talk about, you know, the last few moments of the life of Sayyidah Fatima on the weekend, well, you know, you'll get a better idea how close Imam Hussein and Sayyidah Fatima were. But there's this one story that I want to recite in Masaib just a little bit, inshallah. When Imam Hussein now had made his intention to go towards Kufa, leaving Medina now, he made two very important stops. One stop was the grave of Rasulullah, and one was to say goodbye to his mother. Each of these moments are very different in Hussein's demeanor, his andaz, as you say in Urdu, his approach, and he himself. When he approaches the grave of Rasulullah, it's a commander going to see, you know, it's a soldier going to see his commander. A man who was driven, a man who was prepared, a man who wanted to make the you know, his grandfather very, very proud. Nana, I'm going now towards Kufa. I'm leaving the comforts of Medina. I'm going now to save your deen. The wrong person is sitting on the throne of the Khilafat. Pray for me. But when he went to the grave of his mother, he was completely different. He went stumbling towards the grave of his mother. You know, the example I always give is that sometimes when these young children who are very attached to their mothers, the mom is gone for hours to run errands. Let's say, for example, Baba, where is Mama? Baba, when will Mama come home? Baba, is Mama coming home now? Mama, can you call Mama? This and that. Until that moment where they hear the keys now, jang, you know, moving, and the door is unlocking, and with their eyes bright open, they look towards the door, and in walks their mother. They can't get there fast enough, getting up and stumbling, getting up and running. Mama's here, Mama's here. And all they want is that final embrace of the mother. And so Imam Hussein now goes towards the grave of Sayyidah Fatima. Some say stumbling, and some say walking too fast, collapsing himself. Mama, I'm leaving Medina now. All I want is one last embrace from you. Take me inside with you. You won't be there. Baba Ali won't be there. Nobody will be there. This is the same Hussein now who stumbles also on the day of Ashura. When does he stumble? Ali Akbar now, alayka minni salam, ya abata. Oh Father, accept my salam. At that moment now, Imam Hussein goes roaring to the Maidan of Karbala, gets off his Zuljana a little bit away. Now the khak of Karbala in the air. Aina, aina Ali. Aina, aina Ali. Ali Akbar, I don't see you. Ali Akbar, I don't see you. They say Hussein would stand and fall down, stand up and fall down until he reached the body of Ali Akbar. سَيَعْلَمُ الَّذِينَ ظَلَمُوا أَيَّ مُلْقَلِبٍ يَنْقَلِبُونَ إِنَّا لِلَّهِ وَإِنَّا إِلَيْهِ رَاجِعُونَ